When we send a signal to block the transmitter or to send us location, this is all geodata. And the data that the transmitter is collecting, it's always location-based. So this is geodata, and this is GIS, geoinformation, what I studied.
ZukunftsmacherInnen, der Alumni-Podcast der TU Berlin. Das war Linda Otschwader und sie hat euch einen ersten Einblick gegeben, wie ihr Know-how einfließt in ein Produkt, das sie gerade gelauncht hat. Das nennt sich FICO und es verhindert Entführungen aus dem Auto. Dazu hört ihr gleich mehr. Aber erst einmal hallo und willkommen bei einer neuen Folge unseres Alumni-Podcasts aus dem Herzen der Hauptstadt vom Campus der Technischen Universität Berlin. Ich bin Regine Marx und ich darf gemeinsam mit euch ab sofort das Alumni-Netzwerk der TU Berlin entdecken. Rund 35.000 Mitglieder hat dieses Netzwerk aus 139 Ländern. Sie alle ein, dass sie einst an der TU Berlin studiert, gearbeitet, gelehrt oder geforscht haben und sich auch jetzt noch mit ihr verbunden fühlen. Denn hier erlebten sie prägende Momente. Hier wurden sie zu ZukunftsmacherInnen. Aber wie macht man eigentlich die Zukunft? In jeder Folge stellen wir euch einen dieser schlauen Köpfe vor. Wir sprechen mit ihnen über ihre Vision von Zukunft und darüber, wie sie die Welt ein Stück besser machen wollen. Ihr erfahrt, wie sie ihren Weg gefunden haben, was genau sie in ihrem Job motiviert und was sie heute beruflich treiben, um das Morgen zu gestalten. In dieser Folge lernt ihr Linda Otschwader kennen. Linda kommt aus Kenia und hat dort Geografie an der Moi University studiert. Von 2013 bis 2018 hat sie den englischsprachigen Masterstudiengang Geodesy and Geoinformation Science an der TU Berlin absolviert, dann als Geodata Scientist in Berlin gearbeitet und schließlich ihre eigene Firma gegründet, AfroAI. Was sich dahinter verbirgt, warum sie in der Tech-Branche gelandet ist und warum das ganz logisch ist, das berichtet sie in englischer Sprache in diesem Podcast. Nur so viel schon mal vorweg. Geoinformationssysteme, kurz GIS, sind vielfältig und Geoinformation Scientists sind in vielen Branchen gefragt. Auch im Marketing. Das nennt sich dann Geodata Marketing. Linda, du kannst mir sicherlich verraten, was das genau meint.
For example, let's say, Aldi, it wants to open a new shop somewhere in the north. And they want the best location to open their shop or their new supermarkets. They will need your marketers to do this, to do an analysis of where is the best place to open shops, or where is the best place to open a hospital, where is the best place to construct a road. That's where geographer or geospatial scientists will be found. You can work in mining, you can work in roads and construction. As long as something has a location aspect, you will find geospatial scientists there. As long as something works with spatial science.
Several weeks ago, you launched a new product called FICO.
Yeah. FICO? Yeah, FICO.
It makes your arrival known. Mm-hmm. Your own words. Please, what exactly is FICO?
I had this in mind whenever you're arriving home in Africa, and I am from Nairobi. When you arrive home and you reach at the gate, you don't have automatic gate opening. Or very few homesteads have these automatic gate opening. So what you do is hoot at the gate so that somebody inside the house to open the gate for you. So you always stay with your relatives, your brother, you have a house girl, or you have a gate man. Then they will run to the gate, open the gate for you, like probably wait at the gate 5 to 10 minutes. Or you stop at the gate, call with your mobile phone, and then they come to open the gate for you. Or by yourself, you alight, open the gate, go back to the car, drive in, then close the gate. Or the last option is always the gate man who is there to peep and see, oh, it's the boss, then opens the gate. So I looked at it and I was like, this is it's really dangerous because a lot of people are being carjacked in between in this particular process. Yeah, carjackings are really happening a lot and it's really tiresome. So we devised FICO to have a transmitter inside the house and a receiver inside, a transmitter inside the car, a receiver inside the house. And when you are coming home, while you are still a distance away, you can choose by yourself 500 meters, 200 meters, it sends a signal to the receiver. The transmitter from the car sends the signal to the receiver, and the receiver will give an alert to the people in the house. By the time you reach at the gate, there's somebody already there to open the gate for you, or the gate man is there to open the gate for you.
But why doesn't it open the gate automatically?
Yeah, there is automatic, but automatic means electricity, or it means continuous electricity and power supply, which this is not the case in Africa, or this is not the case from where I come from. You have very frequent power shortage. There is rain, there is power cuts. Or there are places where this is not working at all because we don't have even the power itself, but they have existing gates. Yeah, so you cannot put automatic gate opening. Even the normal remote system, this cannot work because of the power infrastructure.
So it's a product that's really special, especially for the African market.
Yeah, Africa and Asia. I was also looking at countries like India. I presented that to an Indian friend of mine, and she was like, it can work. Yes, it can work. And she understood the problem. So, yeah, for developing countries that have a very bad electricity infrastructure.
It's a very simple way.
Yeah, very simple. More or less simple.
It sounds simple.
yeah. It's a simple way. Yeah.
But it isn't. The technique behind?
The technique behind it, of course, is not simple because you are dealing with people's safety. You are dealing with people's safety. And some people posed questions. What about if there is a carjacking and now these people have the key to your home? So with this implementation, you have to have in mind, okay, what do I do to actually reduce this carjacking, and in case of what is the solution in case of carjacking? So we implemented a panic button in case there is carjacking. You can always press the transmitter. It calls the person of your choice. Then the person can know exactly what is happening inside the car. So he can take steps either whenever the car is approaching, not to open the gate, call the police, or call us, whereby we can always send a blocking code to the transmitter, or we can send a code that gives the geolocation of the transmitter, so you know where your car is or where the thieves took the car to.
Sounds like you're a digital thinking person and digital expert, but in fact, you studied geodata science, geoinformation science, and
geodesy and geoinformation science.
Was genau ist jetzt eigentlich Geodesy? Das ist eine breit gefächerte, stark mathematisch und naturwissenschaftlich geprägte Ingenieursdisziplin. Sie beinhaltet die Erfassung, Modellierung und Verarbeitung von Messdaten mit räumlichem Bezug. Die Analyse, Strukturierung und Visualisierung dieser Geodaten bildet eine fundamentale Basis zur Interpretation und Gestaltung von Lebensräumen. Die große Bandbreite der aktuellen geodätischen Forschung reicht von mikroskopischen Anwendungen in der Medizin über Beiträge zur Fahrzeugnavigation und Umweltmonitoring bis hin zur Planung von Weltraummissionen zur Erkundung und Kartierung fremder Planeten.
First of all, this FICO is revolving around location. So you're going home and your home is a location. So this data is input into the receiver and the transmitter. So you know where home is because this is a geographic location. When we send a signal to block your the transmitter or to send us location, this is all geodata. And the data that the transmitter is collecting, it's always location based. So this is geodata, and this is GIS, geoinformation, what I studied. So just partnering up with engineers and bringing our minds together, then you have geoengineering and IT, and you build up this FICO.
FICO is a product of your own company.
Yes, this is a product of my own company.
Which is called?
Afro AI.
Yes, it's a young company, or?
Yes, it's a very young company. I started it last year.
So you are 32 years old and you just founded your own company. There are not so many women working in this field, right?
No, in tech, there's very less women working in technology and especially in leading position. Yeah, they may be probably working for someone, but in leading position, and this is a tech company, there is no a lot of women. This is a place that it lacks women.
You worked for another company?
Yes, I worked for a company here in Berlin as a geodata scientist.
But you wanted to do your own thing?
Yes. When I met my previous boss, I wanted to do my own thing. And I remember I presented her a project that I wanted actually to form a company in crop yield analysis. But this one is in geographic. So you predict how the crop the yields of the crop.
Yes.
So, I mean, this will be good. Even in my African culture, you can look at insurance companies. They will depend on this to give you microcredits to do your farm work. So if you predict how the crop yields is going to happen, then you can always use it as leverage in microcredits or in your planning.
Yes. Yeah.
So she asked me if I can go work for her. She's also a woman. I can go work for her. I was impressed. So I worked for her for 6 months and then I started my own company.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What's the idea behind your company, Afro AI?
I mean, I started geodesy and geoinformation science, but when I joined this company and I realized that there is a link between data science and GIS and or geospatial science, this was really attractive. This was really an attractive market. And it's always my goal to do something related to Africa because that is what I understand best. I understand Africa very, very, very good than here in Germany, although I've stayed a lot, I mean, 7 years here. And when I started Afro AI, I realized there are companies here in Deutschland or in Europe that have their offices or work with African data sets. A lot of companies. And I wanted to do a consulting with them because if I understand what is behind the data, then I can draw insights very, very quickly and correctly. Yeah, that's why I started Afro AI, for consulting.
Was this always on your mind?
Yeah, it was always on my mind.
Really?
to start a company, I always figure myself as a boss, as in my brothers always called me bossy. yeah. And when I joined TU and I did geodesy and geoinformation science, I then did a second add-on master's called Climate Kick. And this Climate Kick is more of what showed me on what actually taught me about business. So from this is when I was like, okay, I can do this. I can do this. That's when I thought, okay, I will start my own business.
Is FICO a kind of milestone for you and for your company?
As I said, Afro AI was initially started as a consulting company, but then I had my own ideas that I wanted to put out there in the world, and I wanted these ideas to be under Afro AI. But Afro AI has a consulting unit, and I have FICO, that is my own product. So with FICO, it's a product of Afro AI, but it's another company that I am building, and I'm in the process of registering.
Another
brand name, and mm-hmm. It will be under Afro AI as a holding. So the shares of FICO are all for Afro AI, but FICO is a company on its own. Soon will be in the process of registering it. Yeah.
Are there other projects Afro AI is working on?
For example, right now I've just applied for a tender with the German government department together. I do their AI work and they provide the materials and the data. And what we are doing is building a platform, an AI platform, an artificial intelligent platform that will kind of detect an end material of their several materials they have. Right now, I cannot go into specifics. I mean, until the whole process is done. Yeah, but this is what we are doing. So we are building this platform, an AI platform. Yeah. So for other companies, or we combine our efforts with other companies to come up with a tangible product.
How many people work for AfroAI at the moment?
For me right now, I have two senior data scientists, and other data scientists that I have are all on contract basis. So for my data scientists, and I have also engineers. I have two engineers who are more software engineers who are dealing with FICO. I also have web and app developers. And of course, I have a lot of people asking for websites and app and mobile applications.
Why did you choose Berlin and Germany to study?
One is because of a family, but I liked German, although I had like people telling me, don't go to German.
Why?
They're kind of racist. I was like, okay, I want to experience that. When I started my undergraduate, that's when I met my boyfriend, and we've been together for now 10 years. So after meeting him and I wanted to do my master's, he asked me, why don't you try German? Since I'm also in German and it's a bit, they don't pay school fees. I was like, okay, because I was trying to apply in the UK. So I just applied, and I applied to 4 universities in Münster, in Karlsruhe, and Stuttgart, and TU Berlin. So I got admitted in TU Berlin, Karlsruhe, and Stuttgart. And I chose Berlin because, I mean, a lot of people are like, yeah, Berlin is the capital city. A lot of people talk English. It will not be that a hassle. And there's a lot of international people too in Berlin. So I came here thinking I will get friends. I will get a good environment, international area. Yeah, that's why I chose to be in Berlin.
And you had a little boy with you.
Yeah.
Just not your boyfriend.
I had my little boy when I applied for my master's program when I was pregnant. And after giving birth, I stayed in Kenya for 4 months before I flew here in Deutschland to start my master's program with my baby by then 7 months old. So I went to stay with my boyfriend's family first before I came to Berlin with my baby at seven months. Yeah. And my boyfriend by then, he was studying in Nuremberg for his master's too.
Oh.
Yeah, so I was
There's
in
a
Berlin.
Distance.
It was a distance. So I'm in Berlin alone with a baby and my master's program.
So how did you manage to do this?
To me, it's not imagining, but I knew I'm always a fighter. And whenever I fall down, and after some times I wake up stronger. I did my undergraduate was on BA Geography. So BA Geography, it doesn't have any programming, any mathematics completely. And when I joined here, Geodesy and Geoinformation Systems, it was all about programming, several languages in programming, several mathematical field. And I will admit it, it was really hell. And in the evening, when I rush to go pick up my son to go home with, I arrive home, I am so tired, but I have to cook for my son. I have to prepare him to sleep. When he sleeps, then I will do my homework, which was a must. We do the homework, was also part of the grading. And I had several homeworks that are dealing with programming, that are dealing with calculations. And this was really, really stressful. Which was really, really stressful. And I pushed it because I could study up to 3. And then I got a friend of mine who was always also encouraging me. He was also fighting a depression and we will come and talk to me about depression. Yet he himself was fighting depression. So from there, that's how I managed.
And what about your lack of mathematics, IT, and programming skills? How did you deal with that?
Lack of mathematics was just like catching up. I mean, I was really, really good in mathematics but I ended my mathematics working in grade 12. That's where I ended in my mathematics practice. I used to get mathematics only as is kind of 1.0, and that was me. Mathematics was my best subject. So I just had to relearn and rethink and kind of move through, read a lot of books to catch up with the rest. Programming was really hard. I had to have my friend that I told you about, his name is Fabian. He had to come actually and do some tutoring for me to help me out with the programming. Think, okay, what is programming, first of all? He started like that. And the first thing I remember working with him is, okay, Linda, imagine you're building a robot to clean up your mess. I used to throw clothes on the chair. So he's like, imagine you're building up a robot to clean your mess. Can you describe every step that you will tell the robot to do? And that's how you start with programming. So I will describe every step that I will tell the robot to do from start to end. And then we started with Python. We continued a bit with JavaScript, a bit with this web programming. And that's how I became okay with programming.
Okay, so let's talk about your commitment for women in Kenya. In 2013, you founded the Kenda Ralala Women Group.
It's a community-based organization that help women, especially in the rural areas in Busia district, where I come from, to be self-sustainable or to add to whatever their husbands are bringing in. Most women always depend on the income of their husbands, no matter how little it is. And whenever I looked at it, I consider myself as a woman and I would not like to stay in the life they are staying in. So that's how I started Kenda Ralala Women's Group, to empower the women to have their own income and the women to have their own voice. Yeah. So they do agricultural activity together, and with this money they can add to the money that their husbands or boyfriends are bringing into the house. You can never ask a man to give you money for everything. We are women. So you just don't go around asking a man, okay, I need money for sanitary towels. I need money for kerosene for my little lamp. No, you just don't do that. There are 40 women. There are 40 women. And one of the activity, what they do, the first activity they do is merry-go-round. This is more of an African kind of money distribution. Like, they come together and every month they contribute a specific amount of money. And they give it to one member. So it's like a table banking. So per month, you can contribute something like €5, everyone. And then this month after contributing, it goes to one member. So the member gets at once a lot of money, but then he has to contribute to the other members. Yeah, that is one of the things they are doing. The second thing is they are farming together beans and then sell together as a group. And then they divide the profit. They farm potatoes and tomatoes. And then they divide this as a group. They do chicken rearing, goats, and pigs. So with the profit, they share the profit amongst themselves.
And it's still active.
Yeah, still works, still active. We had a bit of some problems during the corona time because they could not meet. And we had also some problems with the chickens. Some of them died. Some of them were stolen. But it's still functional. And right now they depend highly on pigs and agricultural and farm work.
Your parents were a farmer too, huh?
My mom is a farmer, but my dad deals with car spare parts. He's a reseller, a distributor for car spare parts. It's common that women stay at home and men travel to big cities to look for more respectable jobs or to get more decent pay. And the women will remain home to take care of their husbands' mothers, take care of the we say compound. This is another like a cultural difference between German and Kenya. In Kenya, we have really a big compound. A compound is like where your house is. So, to my home, we have something like a football field and round their houses. And this house is what belongs to my uncle. Another belongs to my mother, to my father and mother. Another one belongs to my auntie. Another one belongs to my grandmom. And then once in a while, we eat together outside, just in the middle of the football field, together, seated with lamps and eating. Mm-hmm. And there's a very clear, nice sky with lots of of stars. And like here, you don't have these kind of compound situation or
it's separated.
It's completely separated. There, it's not separated. So it's common that a woman stays with the husband's family and the husband goes to the big cities to look for a decent job.
Mm. Yeah. Do you miss it?
Yes. I miss it, especially during Christmas. Christmas is sacred in Kenya.
What about the future? What will happen there? Are there challenges you have to take in your business, especially?
One big challenge is the fact that I am a black woman in tech. So I started advertising FICO yesterday, and I got several people asking me to take the gadget for demo to them. And one person asked me, "Are you sure you are these technologies for your company?" And I was like, "Yeah." I'm like, "There is no way a woman can do this." And to build trust as a black woman in tech is hard, and this is one of the challenges that I see facing in the future.
Do we need more women in tech to make the world better?
Yes, I think we have totally different thinking. I will give you, for example, this FICO technology. When I presented yesterday, I had a kind of a discussion with somebody from a different group telling me that this FICO technology exists. So I asked him, where does it exist? He sent me a link to a remote-controlled gate, and I was like, no. I am removing that possibility of a remote control gate because of our infrastructure. And he told me, but you can also put it in the gate so that whenever you're arriving, there is a siren at the gate on top. And I'm like, with the siren, you'll be alerting every thief in the neighborhood that you are coming because it's a siren on top and showing red. And every thief will be, okay, he's home right now, let's just rob. Or it's not portable, right? This is a man speaking to me. And then he told me, but this technology, you can always do something in the fence. It's nothing really complicated. And I'm like, look at it. You are a housewife in Kenya. We women, we have social life, and you're like, okay, let me go and visit my neighbor. Let me go and visit my neighbor. And you visit your neighbor. You carry my teko receiver inside your handbag. Go visit your neighbor in the next door. When your husband is at 1 kilometer away, of course it will ring in your bag. Then rush, open the door for your husband. It's Fitz Day. Now, this is me thinking like a woman. But to him, he is thinking like him.
Yes.
Not like me. Or when you are hooting, or with that siren, then you're waking up all the kids in the neighborhood. So me, I'm thinking as a woman, I don't want my kid to wake up and start crying because my neighbor just hooted the gate or the siren on his gate just started. I don't want my son to wake up. It's a headache to make him sleep. So I am thinking like a woman. So yes, in tech world, there is a way that you need to think like a woman. In our brains, there is no difference between us being in tech or an engineer. No, I think we are same. We are built in the same way, and we grasp. In fact, we women grasp more than our counterpart. Mm-hmm. We can do multitasking. We can really multitask. I really do a lot of multitasking. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes I have a problem that I need to tackle, and if I do multitask, I have a different of approaching, a different way of approaching this problem, because I gave myself time and concentrate and do a bit of other works. Then I have other way of thinking to tackle a problem. There is nothing wrong with being a woman in tech, and there is nothing hard in being a woman in tech. Don't be afraid to get what you want. Don't be afraid to speak out just because you're a woman.
That's great. I take it with me. Thanks for your time. It was really
Thank
nice.
You too. It was really great. Yeah.
Das war Linda Otschwada. Sie ist eine ziemlich energetische Person, die viel gestikuliert, wenn sie spricht. Das hört ihr auch an dem Klacken, das immer mal wieder auftaucht im Laufe dieses Podcasts. Dann nehme ich Schluck ihre Uhr auf den Tisch. Ich finde, Linda ist ein tolles Beispiel dafür, wie vielseitig man sich aufstellen kann mit dem, was man gelernt und studiert hat. Und dafür, wie wichtig es ist, Netzwerke zu bilden. Das Alumni-Programm ist eines von ihnen. Damit sind wir schon wieder am Ende dieser Folge unseres Alumni-Podcasts. Wir hoffen, euch hat's gefallen. Wenn ja, freuen wir uns, wenn ihr diesen Podcast abonniert, ihn euren Freunden empfehlt und über eure Kanäle teilt. Folgt und kontaktiert uns gerne auf und über unsere sozialen Kanäle. Ihr findet uns auf Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn oder Xing. Mehr über die TU Berlin und das Alumni-Programm erfahrt ihr auf den Seiten www.tu.berlin oder www.alumni.tu-berlin.de. Zum Schluss möchten wir uns bei der Senatsverwaltung für Wirtschaft, Energie und Betriebe in Berlin für ihre Unterstützung bei der Umsetzung dieses Podcasts bedanken. Und natürlich bei euch fürs Zuhören. Für heute sage ich Tschüss, bleibt gesund und wir hören uns.